This morning is God's law of sowing and reaping. And like Delane and like so many others, we're thinking about spring. And it's a good thing. We could all stand up here and say what impresses us about spring. Because it is an amazing time of the year. New life appearing. Birds are nesting. Calves are growing. Grass is getting green. And you know, I think God wants us to do that, doesn't he? Like, there's verses that talk about how God points men to him even through nature. And I think it's good for us to be drawn to God, to think about it through that. Because I believe even unbelievers are drawn to God through that. So it's definitely good for us as Christians to think about these things. So let's think about God's law of sowing and reaping in our spiritual lives. You know, some of us are farmers, and I was thinking about the thoughts of seeds and all that. And the ladies are kind of have this in their minds too now. They're maybe buying seeds, or they ordered them a long time ago, and they're looking at them and hoping to seed them and put them outside. And when you think about that, each one of those seeds is a miracle of God. A little packet, a little miracle. And I had to think, you know, all these farmers across the country, in just one part of this, the ones that go out and seed wheat, for instance, you know, one bushel of wheat contains approximately 1 million individual kernels. And it was last year, as of June 2025, Alberta farmers had reported a total of area of 8.1 million acres seeded. So just imagine that. Approximately 2 bushels per acre, so there's like 2 million seeds in each acre. 2 million little miracles. It's kind of hard to imagine even, but God created each one of those little seeds. And you know, just even the wheat seed in itself is a bit of a miracle. And I didn't look into this much, but each little seed has three main parts. There's the bran, the outer layer, the next part is the endosperm, the middle layer. And then there's the germ, the smallest part of that seed, making up only 2.5% of the weight. And that is the heart, the living heart of that seed that sprouts and makes a new plant. Just thinking of seeds and how that's a miracle. And I want to just look at that spiritually. I believe we as families are in the springtime of our lives. With young families growing in number and age, I believe it's the sowing time of our lives for many of us. We have young children. Some of us have older children. But we are sowing seeds every day, I believe, in our own lives, in the lives of our children, and in our church, in our community. And just think about it. As powerful, everything we do and say, I believe, is like throwing a seed in the ground. And think about it as a miracle of God, how he puts that seed in the ground. He makes it grow. It's a little bit like us in our actions and our words and our thoughts. Every day we're seeding. Let's look at Galatians 6. Galatians 6. Verse 7. It says, "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." So there it is. It could fit a little bit in with our lesson this morning, our Sunday school lesson about that discussion we had about how we're spiritual people. We're being sanctified every day. But this is our choice. We're sowing. We're throwing seed in the ground, so to speak. In other words, there are direct consequences for our actions. There are definite good things and definite wrong things to be sowing and living. Isn't it an amazing thought that God gives us as humans, imperfect humans, the opportunity, privilege, and responsibility to choose what we will sow? Every one of us here this morning is sowing seeds. Everyone out in the world is sowing seeds. And it's our choice whether we sow good seed or bad seed, and then how we take care of that after that. Ephesians 5 has a thought of, "For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable unto the Lord." Like I said before, I'd like to suggest that every one of our words, deeds, and thoughts are like seeds being sown in our lives. I believe even our thoughts, I didn't think about this terrible long, but I think even the thoughts we allow ourselves to think are like seeds in our own lives that sprout and grow and then affect others. Hosea 10:12 says, "Sow to yourselves in righteousness, reap in mercy. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek the Lord till he come and rain righteousness upon you." You know, it doesn't matter how distorted and ridiculous the world views God. It doesn't change God's truth. It doesn't change the fact here that we read about that God will not be mocked. God set his plan into the world. His truth is settled in heaven. It's not going to change no matter how the world moves and changes. And so the things we sow do matter. And they are, God has laws in place that determine the outcome of what we sow. I've noticed and watched different individuals, families, and churches in my short lifetime, and I don't feel like I've lived that long, but the older you get, I guess that's a part of life. But I've watched families and churches in my short lifetime, and I'm amazed at the journey of their lives. You know, maybe you grew up with them, whatever. You see how they were. You knew how they were. And you watch, through their life, maybe they changed for good or bad. And maybe the way they started is totally different than how they turned out. And it just makes me realize that there were a lot of seeds sown, directions taken, choices made, and altogether they're making a harvest. What kind of harvest are you and I choosing? What am I choosing? What seeds am I choosing to sow? And what in that way I'm choosing my own harvest also. Let's be intentional about our sowing. You know, as farmers, we decide what we're going to put in our fields. We don't just let some other farmer decide what, just come in and sow whatever you got left over. No, we decide we're going to plant wheat in this field, canola in this field, maybe some corn. We're intentional about it because we watch the prices a little bit and we decide, okay, we're not God. We don't know how it's going to turn out, but we make an intentional decision about the seeds we plant. Same with the ladies putting it out in their gardens. They want a certain kind of flower, so they go buy that certain seed and they plant it and take care of it. (Clears throat) You take a good field of soil and dig it up, and but don't plant anything in it. It's going to turn out to be weeds. Like somebody mentioned this morning in our Sunday school, how does that all work? Is it God's part or is it our part to fill our lives up with good things? Just a side note. But I believe we need to be intentional about sowing good things in our hearts and the lives of others. If we're not intentional, by default there will be sin. As parents and older people, we need to have good seed planted in our own hearts, in my own heart, to be able to pass that on to our children. If we work upon marble, it will perish. If on brass, time will efface it. If we rear temples, they will crumble into dust. But if we work upon immortal minds and imbue them with principles, with the just fear of God and the love of our fellow men, we engrave on those tablets something that will brighten to all eternity. So just a Bible example or two of people that definitely were sowing in their lives. Let's look at 1 Samuel. In this story, we're going to skim over. It leaves out a lot of details. There's a lot of details we don't know. But you can kind of read between the lines and realize that these people were sowing seeds in their families, in their own lives. 1 Samuel 1, verse 1. Says, now there was a certain man of Ramoth in Zophim of the mount of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, and the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, and the son of Zoph, and an Ephrathite. And he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah, and the other the name of Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And this man went up to his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. So we have two different families coming into focus all of a sudden. It's the family of Hannah and her husband and then the son they had, and then it says Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord. So we have two different stories kind of coming together here. And we just want to look at a few more verses. Verse 21. And this is Hannah again. And when she, after they had had their son, and she had promised him to the Lord. Verse 24, it says, and when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with three bullocks and one ephah of flour and a bottle of wine and brought him unto the house of the Lord in Shiloh, and the child was young. And they slew a bullock and brought the child to Eli. And she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee praying unto the Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition which I ask of him. Therefore also have I lent him to the Lord, as long as he liveth, and he shall be lent to the Lord, and he worshipped the Lord there. So, we have Elkanah and Hannah here. They had a son. She had prayed for this son especially. And God had given her a son, and she wanted to give him back to the Lord. And there's a lot, like I say, that is missing. A lot of details we don't get. But I just get the feeling here that they were a constant godly family, and they would go up to the city and worship every year. And I believe they just lived that way. And then we're going to notice this other family that we see coming into focus here, chapter 2, verse 11. It says, and Elkanah went to Ramah to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. Now the sons of Eli were the sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. And you could ask, why didn't they know the Lord? They were right there in the temple. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came while the flesh was seething with a flesh hook of three teeth in his hand, and he struck it into the pan or kettle or cauldron or pot, all that the flesh hook brought up the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh unto all the Israelites that came thither. Also before they burnt the fat, the priest's servant came and said unto the man that sacrificed, give flesh to roast for the priest, for he will not have sodden flesh of thee, but raw. But if any man said unto him, let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desireth, then he would answer him, nay, but they shall give it to me now, and if not, I will take it by force. Wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I just want you to get the picture of these two different families, two different people coming together, and how one was turning out to serve the Lord, and the other two men here were just evil. And it was their choices. It was the seeds they were sowing. Let's go down to verse 26. And the child Samuel grew on and was in favor both with the Lord and also with men. And there came a man of God unto Eli and said unto him, thus saith the Lord, did I plainly appear into the house of thy father when thou were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house? And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon mine altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the children of Israel. Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I commanded in my habitation, and honorest thou thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Maybe we'll stop there. Let's read in chapter 4 yet, 4 verse 10 and 11. It says, and the Philistines fought, and Israelites was smitten, and they fled every man into his tent, and there was a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen, and the ark of God was taken, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were slain. So hopefully you know the story of that a little better than I read, but just the two families, the two people and the two sons of Eli, how I believe they were products of two different families, but I believe they were also sowing seeds on their own. And the two different outcomes. Samuel was a faithful servant of God all through his life, and you see these two sons of Eli dying for their sin. Anyhow, let's leave it there. Just for a little bit of inspiration on a bit of an example of how that happened back then, and it's still happening today, I believe. We could think of Lot and his family in Sodom. Lot was faithful himself, but he lost some of his family because he stayed there too long. We could think of Noah and his sons. How God saw the wickedness of the earth, and he got tired of it, and he said, I'm going to destroy it. But he told Noah how to make an ark, and Noah did exactly what God said, and he saved his family. So let's think of a few seeds that I believe are definitely good seeds to sow in our lives, in the lives of our communities. And I thought of this lately. Maybe this is a bit of a different thought, but I believe it is a good seed to be sowing, in a sense. We live in a world where it seems that people are being devalued, degraded, debased, whatever you want to put in there. We have abortion, we have euthanasia, we have gender-altering practices being accepted and even promoted in our society. I believe it's becoming common for people to be cremated when they die. And, you know, that could be a subject all on its own. But I think it fits a little bit in this thought of devaluing people and their souls. It's not unheard of for some to have no funeral at all. Just the whole idea of devaluing life. These beliefs and practices can have an effect on us as Christians. I believe they do to an extent. But we can choose different. We can choose God's view of life and the value He places on us, our children, and the world around us. Because the world views life this way, they also tend to live their lives that way. They tend to live their lives cheaply. You go around and you notice people and you're like, wow, I wonder what their life actually is. What are their values? Last part of 1 Corinthians 15:32 talks about the thought of let us eat and drink for tomorrow we die. And I think that's maybe what a lot of people think nowadays. They're taught evolution. They're taught that life is cheap. Do whatever you want. But then they also live without hope. They don't have hope even for this life, I believe. But we can choose to believe different. We can choose to sow seeds of hope in this dark world, I believe. And that's a little the thought I want to leave here. Sow the seeds of hope in my life, in your life, in our children's lives. And if we have that belief, it will also spread out to the world around us, I believe. And I wish I could have had more thoughts on the positive side here, but I want to give a few. How can we sow those seeds of hope? And I'm going to read Psalm 139, a couple verses. I know it's some of my favorite verses, but I'm going to read them anyhow. For thou hast possessed my reins. Thou hast covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise thee, for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. You know, let's believe that about ourselves and also about every neighbor we meet. He is created by God. He is special, specially made by God. And let's value them. Value ourselves. Value our children. Value the neighbor down the road, the person we meet in town. Let's sow those seeds of valuing people. Think about Christ, how he lived his life. I believe Jesus valued people when he walked this earth, and I believe he still values us the same today, even though he's not here to heal us and walk beside us. Let's look at Mark 10. Mark 10, verse 13. I just like this. When you think of valuing people and how Christ valued people, he even had time for the young children. Mark 10, verse 13, and it says, they brought the young children to him that he should touch them, and his disciples rebuked those and brought them. But when Jesus saw it, he was much displeased and said unto them, suffer the little children to come unto me, and forbid them not, for of such is the kingdom of God. Verily I say unto you, whosoever shall not receive the kingdom of God as a little child, he shall not enter therein. And he took them up in his arms, put his hands upon them, and blessed them. That's Christ's attitude. That's Christ's view of children then and same today. Let's be Christ's hands and feet in this world. Let's also look at Luke chapter 4. verse 16. Luke chapter 4, verse 16 says, "And he came to Nazareth," this is Jesus again, "where he had been brought up, and as his custom was, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day and stood up for to read. And there was delivered unto him the book of the prophet Isaiah, and when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, 'The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captives, and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord.'" So some more things that Christ did while he was here. And isn't that our mission in this world today? No, we're not Christ. We can't go around healing people. But we can have that same attitude. To preach to the poor, to do what we can to heal the brokenhearted. We can do that. We can be Christ's hands and feet. And James chapter 2 talks about how God is no respecter of persons, and I believe that is related to this topic we're looking at of sowing seeds of hope, sowing seeds of valuing people. We can't be respecter of persons if we're going to follow Christ. God isn't, and so why would I be? Acts 17:26 says, "And he hath made of one blood all nations of men, for to dwell on the face of the earth, and hath determined the times before appointed and the bounds of their habitation." I don't know what all that verse means, but I think we could take the thought from there, especially the thought of one blood, all nations. You and I are the same as every other person on the planet. We are made of the same stuff. And I think that can help us when we think of valuing others, to remember that God loves them exactly as much as he loves me. He values us, he values them. So let's do the same. Matthew 10:31, "Fear ye not therefore, for ye are of more value than many sparrows." Just a thought of God's love for us, how he knows so much about us. And I hope this inspires you I wish I could add more thoughts on this, how to inspire hope, how to inspire value in our neighbors, in our people we meet. But for the Christian, there's also hope for the future. And I don't believe our world has that. They're taught evolution, so they don't even have absolutes to live by. And the way they live brings hopelessness to them, I believe. But as a Christian, we have so much to share, I believe. We know that God planned our life from start to finish. He planned their lives too. Let's take that message to them, and we also have hope for the future. John 14:1-3 says, "Let not your heart be troubled. Ye believe in God, believe also in me." This is Jesus. "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, where I am, ye may be also." I hope God inspires us to think about the value of people, the value of you and I, the value of your brother and sister, and the value of every person in the world. Let's sow those seeds in our children's hearts, and they will grow. Am I sowing seeds of integrity? Thinking of different seeds to throw in the ground. You know, we have those little packets of seeds. There's all kinds of different flowers and different things we want to seed. Let's just think of those think of our own lives, how I can plant seeds in my own heart and into my children's hearts. Am I sowing seeds of integrity? Because these seeds grow. I can either sow in seeds of honesty, integrity, or I can sow seeds of dishonesty, hypocrisy. And I know this. I'm speaking to myself too, because I am so flawed. But I can intentionally sow seeds for God of integrity. 2 Corinthians 8:21 says, "Providing for honest things, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men." Do I strive to be honest? Do I strive to walk before God in honesty, in the things I allow, in the way I present myself, in the way I act to my neighbors, just in the way we live? What about the seeds of faith and trust in God? Do I intentionally trust God in my own heart, and then do I intentionally try to sow that seed in my children's lives? To trust God. You know, there's so many things that are out of control in our own lives. We tend to think as basically wealthy people that, okay, we have this figured out, we have this figured out, we have that figured out. Got it all figured out. But there comes sometimes in your lives where you're like, wow, you know what? I really don't have much figured out. I mean, okay, we can have things kind of planned, but as far as variables, there's so many. And we have to trust in God, and it is very good. It's healthy for us to have to trust in God. And not have to, we want to. Because there, you can choose to just live your life and act like God doesn't exist, but that is very futile. So let's sow the seeds of faith and trust in God. What about thankfulness? Philippians 4 verse 6 says, "Be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." Am I thankful? Am I seeding that in my children's hearts? That thankfulness, that seed of thanksgiving. Can I spread that around to the world? Yes, they're distressed about war and all that's going on, the shake-ups that happen. But can we point them to a God? Can we point them to thankfulness? What about stability? Do my children know that, that the dad and mom are a stabilizing force? They're not going to be moved by a whole lot. Yes, it's good to have open minds. Definitely, if we need something in the Word pops out and we need to change, we need to move. But I'm talking about, maybe you can think back to your dad and mom as spiritual stabilizers in your life. You know what they believe. You know what they're going to do. You know how they're going to react to, you name it. Am I that stabilizing force in my family? Am I that solid rock that they can come back to and say, what do you think? They know where I'm going to be. Not that we're boneheaded, but let's be stable for our families, for the world around us. Let's not be easily swayed by new and different things that come along, like Ephesians talks about, carried about with every wind of doctrine. Am I sowing the seeds of respect for authority in the home, in the church, in the earthly government, in the workplace? Do I sow the seeds of respect for civil law and order? Maybe it comes down to the smallest thing, like the speed limit. Do I actually honor that and try to follow that? I believe these little seeds, they grow how I relate to people, how I relate to the authority over me. So what are different ways, how are different ways we can, sorry, I should cover this one more thing I forgot here. Do I sow the seed of purity? There's that verse in Matthew that talks about, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Do I give my children clear lines of what's good and bad? What's acceptable behavior or not? Do I have a healthy fear of wrong in my own life? Do I, and we've heard this before, but I'm just going to say it again, reading material, internet usage, social media, music. These are seeds that I plant in my heart. And you can allow those seeds to be planted in your children's hearts, in the world around us. What do I enjoy? What do I allow to sprout in my heart? These are definitely seeds that are for good or evil. And there will be a harvest. Evil communications corrupt good manners, but I also believe, on the other hand, good communications make good manners. So different ways we sow seed in our world, our families, and our church. By example, of course, more is caught than is taught. We've heard that before. And I believe it's very true. The way I live my life, the way you live your life. By word of mouth. This is Moses speaking to Israel and said, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. That just has a thought there of teaching the whole way through life. Whatever we're doing, try to have that thought in our hearts that we are sowing seed. Okay, in closing, let's look at Psalm 126. I'm just going to read it here. Psalm 126, verse 5 and 6. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. He that goeth and forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed, shall doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. I want to read a song at the end here. Would men know you've been with Jesus? Can they feel his presence near? As with them you join labor, as with them you journey here. Would men know by word and action, in the small things of this life, in the daily round of duty, in the midst of toil and strife? Inasmuch as unto others ye have done these things, said he, but unto me ye did the service, witness that all men may see. Not by word of lip full often is the world convinced of truth, but the deed of loving service from the heart brings fullest proof. Can men tell that you love Jesus? Can they buy your life and mine? See in daily walk and action that we have his life divine. Thank you for your attention. May God bless.